Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Veterans Advocate Podcast. Kicking off this latest season with a pretty cool guy. His name is Ryan Matthews. He is an expert dog trainer. He started training dogs in the Army. Then he started doing it on his own when he got out of the Army. He's trained thousands and thousands of dogs to do all kinds of cool things, from being service dogs to going to your fridge and getting you a beer. He can even train your dog to put your kids to bed if you want. And to me, that's worth every penny. So without further ado, here's Ryan Matthews. Hey, Ryan, thanks for joining me today. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, man. It's been a busy day, and I'm happy to close it with you here and your audience. I'm happy to be here, man.
Yeah, thanks for that. So you came by my show by way of Connor and his podcast, The Unemployed Project. Were you a guest on his show also?
Yes, I was. Yeah, I was on his show as well. And then after the show, he's like, man, I got to connect you with my guy. And, you know, I feel like you guys would have a lot of alignment and have a really awesome show. And then that inspired me to reach out.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you did. Connor was a good guy. I had a really good time on his podcast. He's got a pretty cool show.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah, I like his mindset and super positive guy, which I always like associating with positive people.
No, absolutely, man. I mean, that's where it's all at, keeping a positive mindset. So if I understand it right, you are a dog trainer by profession, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's what I'm mostly well known for. And I've been changing up my business model as it relates to that. But it's kind of one of the few hats that I wear.
All right, cool. So I'm curious how you got involved with that. So what made you get into that profession? Because that's kind of a hard thing to do if you don't already have some kind of prior knowledge, right?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's interesting is I've been training dogs since 2002, and I've met a lot of people along the way. And there's so many people that would say, oh, wow, that's so cool. You do dog training. I wish I could do that. And there's also the other people that say, oh, cool, you do dog training. But what do you really do for like your full-time job? And the funny part is what you're going to hear is I definitely made enough money for it to be a full-time job and then some, but we'll get into that. And so the way that I became a dog trainer was actually me being a military working dog handler first in the Army. And so I'm certified for like to do drug detection or explosive detection and also bite work. So I'm trained to teach a dog how to bite. Also how to let go, that part matters, right? And then also how to get a dog to search a building and find someone in that building as well. And so that's a few of the variety of things that I was trained to do in the Army back in 2002 is when I graduated Lackland Air Force's, it's DOD's program for military working dog handlers.
So that's an actual Air Force school?
It's a DOD school, but it's at the Air Force Base in San Antonio.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. So how long were you in the Army?
So I was in from 2000 to 2006, did a combat deployment from 05-06, and then I got out after that. And then I ended up eventually getting into pet dog training.
Yeah. Where were you deployed to?
What's interesting about me being a dog handler and doing a deployment is that we had a tasking for two positions to be deployed to Iraq. So we didn't know where it was, nor did we know who would go. And so being the canine unit, we're kind of like this small brotherhood. There's like 10 of us. They're just like, hey, this is the tasking. Who wants to go? And everyone had gone already. And so my buddy and I had volunteered to go. And we went with two explosive canines. So my buddy went to Baghdad and I went to Mosul, Iraq, and worked with random infantry and SF units. And so that was cool, but it wasn't because I never really formed a bond or a brotherhood because I would just work with random units each time. And so we never really had a chance to truly connect.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that being pretty hard. That's something I talk about sometimes because I was in the Air Force and I feel that way about the Air Force sometimes because when we deploy, more often than not, we deploy as an individual. And like you said, if you deploy as a unit, you're a brotherhood, you guys have trained together, you've lived together, you work together, then you deploy together, and then you come back home together. hopefully. But in the Air Force, it's not really like that. So I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah. There's no banners. There's no welcome home formation. There's maybe even not anyone to greet you at the airport. And that feels lonely. And you know what's interesting is that I didn't even recognize or acknowledge that until many years after getting out. That, yeah, I never did have a welcome home.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's not that big of a deal, but it kind of sucked.
Yeah. No, I get that, man. I mean, it's very similar for most of us in the Air Force. You know, a lot of these guys kind of come back from a deployment and it's like, okay, well, get a cab and go home. And there's nobody there, maybe their wife or something, obviously. But, you know, it's not like if you were coming home with like a whole battalion or something, you know, because then it's a formal event and you probably have some kind of formation and then you're dismissed and everyone's family's there and everybody has banners. There's something that, you know, there's something in that, you know, in the making of the show of a thing that that is helpful for some reason. You know, we love ceremonies and parades and ceremonies, and it just helps form those bonds, you know. And if you don't have that, even though you don't expect it, you're missing out on something still.
Right. Yes. Yeah, that's definitely was my experience as well. And I didn't know that about the Air Force, so I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, there are a few units who do that, who do deploy with, you know, squadrons. So like some of the security forces guys, which are our MPs, sometimes, you know, you might have a couple, like a squadron of jets go somewhere. But by and large, it's mostly individual augmentees, some civil engineering. But yeah, it's one off. And it's really strange, man, because like you said, like you get there and then you kind of come home and you go back to work. And it's
exactly.
Yeah, it's a strange feeling. Like, yeah, you've nailed it. And I think part of that also is why, in my opinion, why the Air Force is having such a hard time with suicide rates too, is because the camaraderie is not built into the system like it is with other branches. You know, the Army, the Navy, and the Marine Corps. You know, when you go somewhere with your guys. You know, in the Air Force, not really like that. So I think that's a contributing factor.
That's an interesting thing to analyze. Yeah, I'm curious what the pros would say about that, but it really makes great sense. I think that community is massively important. That's why AA or NA has been very successful for a lot of people, is that sense of community, I think, is huge.
No, absolutely. I don't know if you've ever read the book by, it's called Tribe by Sebastian Younger. Have you read
that? Man, people keep telling me to read it, and it was on my radar, and then it dropped off. I'll write that on my to-do list. I'll get it on Audible.
It's good, but it basically, I mean, it summarizes everything you and I just said. Community is the difference. So I wonder, you know, with you and with animals, you know, even though you didn't really have that community with other guys you were in, did having a dog help?
So here's what's interesting about that, as it relates to being a canine handler in the Army. And that was, I was assigned multiple dogs, and that was great, yet it wasn't, because my first dog was a narcotic detection dog in Seoul, Korea, named Raleigh. And Raleigh and I just fell in love with that dog, man. And then I didn't think about the fact that one day Raleigh and I would part ways. And that's what happened. I was due to change duty stations. I went from Korea to Fort Carson, Colorado, and Raleigh stayed in Seoul, Korea. Well, that just tore me up, because like we were partners. We were like one of the same, and that I had a hard time with leaving Raleigh. And so that meant moving forward, kind of like how some of us may do in relationships. I know I'm guilty of it, and that is, once we are exposed to something that's uncomfortable or painful, we then show up differently to others in the world, right? So for me, my next dog, what did that mean? I'm slightly guarded. My heart wasn't all the way open, and I only allowed myself to connect because I knew our relationship was very temporary. Yeah. And it wasn't until working with dogs and having my own civilian dogs, because after the war, man, I was like super numb. I remember holding my ex-wife and hugging her and praying to a higher power to have a feeling. I couldn't feel nothing hugging her. And I was just numbed out, and I had no emotions. And dogs were the first beings that I was able to start to have feelings towards again. And so they really helped me open my heart up, and they've taught me about this unconditional love that is an ongoing practice. It's because, you know, when you get bothered, hurt, or triggered, then maybe you put your walls up, and then you start to pull back your heart. And so I think that dogs is one of the beautiful gifts that they teach us, is this unconditional love.
Yeah, you know, they say that dog is the only thing that's going to love you more than, you know, it loves itself. And I think that's true, because, you know, all these movies we see with dogs and all these cool stories we hear about with dogs, like over and over again, there's tons of examples of that. You know, dogs taking on mountain lions and intruders, constantly inserting themselves in between like you and danger. You know, it's just instinct for them, and you don't even have to teach them. They just know it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're really intuitive. I mean, they really operate on a different capacity or frequency than we do. Dogs they're very much in the moment, versus we're stuck in our past and shame and guilt, and then worried by way of our future. And they're just like, hey, what's my current existence? Everything's really cool right now. I'm super happy. You know? Yeah. And that's, I think, one of the differences is that's another lesson that they teach us, is to be present. And so I actually highlighted the life lessons that dogs teach us by way of my second TEDx talk titled, Let's Treat Others More Like Dogs. And so if people Google TED.com and then they search Ryan Matthews, they'll find that talk. It's just 8 minutes. And I highlight, you know, these incredible takeaways that we can get from dogs if we can pay more attention to how they show up in the world.
No, that's a really good idea. You know, I mean, being present, I think, is something we all struggle with. And I think veterans kind of struggle with that a little bit more than some of the other people, just because of the things they're exposed to. But yeah. If we can pick up that lesson from a dog, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. Well, it comes down to a choice as well. You know, not listening to all these things that are stirring around in our heads, and stepping into our power and having some ownership as well, and taking the necessary steps to move beyond our past. And no one says it's easy. Like, it's not. And we're going to screw it up here and there, but in time we screw it up less and less. And yeah, being present, I think, is massively important. And what's interesting about being present is those around us start to connect with us more so, because they feel valued, they feel important. And like, so for example, putting your phone away when you're in the presence of your significant other, you're like, wow, I'm more of a priority. Hey, that means a lot. Like, sometimes it's just the simple stuff.
No, absolutely. Have you trained like service dogs and things like that then?
Yeah, so it's not something that I offer, but the answer is yes, I have. Right now, one of the funner cases I'm working with is a dog named Frida. You could Google this dog. She's like really well known. She was hit by a car in Thailand and was rescued by Dr. Chong here in Southern California. And this dog like cannot walk on its rear feet, paws. It walks on like the joints, the rear joints. And so because of what this dog's been exposed to, there's lots of trauma, it's very fearful, and it shows up in the way of what appears to be aggression. And so I share that to share like, yeah, I can work on extreme cases like that, or I can work on how to teach a dog to search for a cell phone. They do that in the prisons, or how to teach a dog to search for explosives or diabetes or whatever. What it is that I own the knowledge of how to teach these core principles. So whether we want to teach a dog to go and sit on, say, a doggy bed and stay there, or to go and do an obstacle on an agility course, some of the way that you get there is the same. It's about breaking something complex down into very simple, and then gradually working towards complex. So I've developed different systems that I use and share with people when I teach them that has been proven to work thousands of times over and over. And so, yes, I do service dog training, but I don't advertise it. I do more consulting for dog trainers or service dog organizations, that kind of stuff. I only work with 4 select people per month nowadays, which is the opposite of how I used to do it. Before, I worked with like 10 to 12 people per day, and I got burned out, and that's how I worked with thousands of dogs. And so now I do it much differently because I have multiple companies, and because I'm trying to scale myself to do online dog training. So those that can't afford me for hundreds of dollars per hour can still have access by way of the online dog training for $37 a month and still serve and help them as well. And that's important and near and dear to my heart.
No, that's awesome. That's a fantastic idea, you know, because I've seen some of these television shows, you know, like The Dog Whisperer, and there's always something on Animal Planet. And I've always like, man, I'd really like to train a dog someday. And, you know, when we get a new one, which we're kind of eyeing a maybe like an Australian Shepherd or something of that nature.
Sure.
In the somewhat near future, you know, I want a German Shepherd. My wife likes a smaller dog, so I think that's probably maybe a good compromise. But yeah, I'll have to check that out because I really want to get my daughter involved with that when she's a little bit older, because I think it would be perfect for her.
How old is she?
Well, she's 3 now, so I think in a couple years she'll
absolutely be
a little old enough to kind of get it. I don't expect her to do it all, but I want her to take part in the process. Just for learning for her and then, you know, bonding with the dog too.
Absolutely. Because what I've learned is whether it's for animals or for human to human, you know, time is love and love is time. So when like your daughter in the instance of bonding and spending time with the dog, you know, it allows for a deeper connection. And so I think that that's a great idea. So whatever when they're training or grooming the dog pet, brushing the dog, that's investing time together and bonding. So I think that's a great idea. Yeah. Now, as it relates to selecting a dog, a lot of people go based on breed or how a dog looks. However, I recommend that we get a dog based on the personality and our lifestyle. And so if you all are active, then yeah, the working breed is maybe a good choice. The other thing is, if you're getting a herding breed, that herding breed may try to herd your kid, right? And so they can be a bit bossy. And so that means you all need to know that going into it. And that means that you'll need to step into your power because you pay the bills, it's your house. But sometimes the herding breeds can be a little pushy and they'll actually herd people out of the house or they'll say, hey, you need to come over here. And so that's, again, based upon their personality. And so I encourage you to not go based upon necessarily how the dog looks, but based on your lifestyle and that dog's specific personality.
So can I train this dog to put my kids to bed? Because that would be awesome.
Yeah, so you just have to define. So like as it relates to dog training, when it comes to something like this, I just think like an engineer, and I'm not an engineer. And all I do is I take the complex thing and I just reverse engineer it. And so I need to know from you, like, well, what does taking the kids to bed mean, right? And so that can look in a different ways. So first define what is the end goal, and then like, so taking them to the bed, and then like, well, how does the dog take them to the bed? Does the dog have like a rope, a leash on it, and then the kids are, you know, taught to hold the leash and then the dog guides them to the room? Or is it the dog like herds them and kind of forces them into the room but passively? Like there's different ways it can show up. Or maybe the dog can go and grab the pillow in its mouth, bring it to the kid, and that's the cue, it's time to go to bed, right? Like there's different fun ways you can get creative. And so that's what I'm able to do is you're like, well, how do I get my dog to get a beer out of the fridge? Like people want that. And it's like, sure, let's just look at how we break this stuff down. And so that's what I'm able to do. So dogs can do just about anything as long as they are physically able, right? So like an old dog, we can't teach them to jump and stay on a fire hydrant. Like my dog can't. It's called place command. Okay. But an older dog doesn't have the mobility to do that anymore. Okay. So it has to be physically able and the dog has to have the motivation to want to do something. Right. So usually we need to have a food or some kind of reward, a toy to motivate them and inspire them by way of positive reinforcement.
No, that's really cool. Have you ever met a dog that was untrainable?
Yeah, there's been, I think, 2 or 3 in the 3,000. I don't know. I quit counting. Over 3,000. And those dogs have a neurological defect. Those dogs are really off. Those dogs have, like, beyond OCD, beyond staring and chasing at shadows, you know, which people think is cute, but it's really unhealthy. You know, these dogs are just very off. And you know what? It's true with people and it's true with dogs. But overall, dogs are actually pretty dang easy to train. I developed a system that is scalable to pretty much any dog as long as they don't have that neurological defect, which is very, very rare that one would.
Interesting. What's your opinion on pit bulls?
I think they're great. I love pit bulls. Yeah, they're one of my favorite breeds. You know, there's the problem with pit bulls is that a few things. One is the media has said, well, we have it out for these dogs and we're going to just share the horrible stories. But, you know, there's not a lot of PR and media news about the pit bulls that are serving as police dogs or therapy dogs, because they do exist. Those stories aren't being told because they're not dramatic enough. Right. And that's kind of how the media works. They want the dramatic stories. They're not always looking for the heartfelt stories. But I could tell you that my girlfriend has 3 pit bulls and they are sweethearts. And so the media is one problem. And another problem with pit bulls is the horrible breeding. Right. So there's and same with German Shepherds. You mentioned German Shepherds. There's so much backyard breeding going on that the genetics, the quality, I call it like Shepherds instead of GSG, German Shepherd. I call it LQS, low quality Shepherd. Right. And so there's so many low quality dogs out there from these backyard breeders that are not, they're doing it for the money. And like, I cannot get behind that. I can't support that.
Yeah. You know?
So I think that pit bulls are very driven. They are a dominant breed. I think that they odds are against them. I think that they are very powerful and they're used in a negative way in a lot of instances, but there's also a lot of incredible instances. And these dogs are really, really sweethearts, but the socialization matters for all dogs, not just pit bulls. So I think what's been done with them is unfair in a lot of ways by way of the media. And they're actually one of my top 3 favorite breeds. I haven't owned one yet. I've trained German Shepherds in the military, but I've owned Rottweilers and Belgian Malinois for myself. So I do like the kind of tougher breeds, the more dominant breeds. But I think pit bulls are incredible. And, you know, there's more naughty Chihuahuas out there than there are pit bulls.
Yeah, yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, and because people don't know this, but Chihuahuas were bred to be alert dogs, protection dogs, security dogs in Chihuahua, Mexico. That's what they were bred for. So they're just doing their job. That's why they're so yappy.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. And so anyways, yeah, I have a lot of love for the pit bull breed, and anyone listening that has a pit bull rescue or works with them, I'm happy to see how I can help and collaborate to reverse some of the stigma and let's get some pit bulls out and about. Now, the other part is this, and just one more thing about that is that people can take a really good dog and irresponsible people can really screw that dog up, whether it's a German Shepherd or a pit bull, right? By this dog fighting, which is popular in some areas. But then you also have like maybe someone that's not a very strong handler. So let's say like someone very petite, that's very young, like a kid, or a very elderly person with a strong German Shepherd. That Shepherd's going to act up too, because it doesn't have that responsible person. They don't have the means to give that, set that dog up for success. Right. Yeah. And so that's some of what's wrong as well with the pit bull. So I'm happy to help out for anyone that's listening to that has pit bullers that's in that space, because I don't think it's fair what's being done with or to them.
No, definitely. So you mentioned you had a top 3 favorite dogs. What are your top 3?
Yeah. So my favorite 3 is the Belgian Malinois, the Rottweiler, and the pit bull.
Okay. What are your least favorite 3?
Shiba Inu and Dachshunds and Bull Terriers. And that's because those 3 that I most recently mentioned are like 3 of the 5 toughest breeds to train. And so I don't like the Shiba Inu because they're like cats. Now, hold on. I love all dogs, but I don't like all dogs, right?
Gotcha.
So I have this genuine, hey man, I got love for you. However, by way that they show up in the world, I'm like, man, I don't like your cat-like persona, because I don't like cats. I really don't like them. And it's because I was woken up by cats as a child numerous times. I couldn't sleep, and that was really annoying.
Yep.
And so anyways, and the Shiba Inu is very cat-like. Bull Terriers are often very neurotic, and I don't like how they're not very balanced. And a lot of them are very selfish. They're really looking out for themselves in the world versus like a golden retriever is like, owner, how can I serve you? What can I do for you? you know, I'm going to come and give you love. Bull terriers, like, how can I up-level my current situation? Constantly, that's how, broadly speaking, the bull terrier is. Yeah. And dachshunds also are kind of difficult to work with because they're, you know, they have that terrier mindset and they're really feisty and they're just not all that too receptive to training. However, I've worked with plenty that end up doing a great job. It's just they're more resistant to the training.
No, that's really cool. I didn't really know that about the terriers. They look like really cool dogs, but just because it looks cool doesn't mean it's going to be a good dog.
Like terriers traditionally are kind of difficult dogs to own because they have this feistiness that the public doesn't know what to do with.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I had a German Shepherd growing up. It was a white German Shepherd. It was the best dog I've ever owned, and that's the benchmark of any dog I will ever own in my life because it was great. You know, it was loving. It was very well trained. My uncle trained it, and every night it would go like room to room to room just to make sure everybody was, you know, in bed and safe before it'd go lay down. And
that's funny.
Just the best dog ever, and so I'm dying to get another one because of that.
That's cool. Yeah, so the white shepherds often tend to be pretty neurotic. So I would find out where that dog came from and make sure you have some really solid bloodlines. Yeah, that's important. It's really important to vet the breeder if you do that route. But there's lots of rescues out there too. But that's why it's important to know how to read a dog. So I help people with dog behavior and psychology and interpreting body language because dogs communicate like over 90% nonverbal, just like us, right? And so if we can read what the dog is saying, for example, people think a wagging tail means happy, doesn't. It means excitement, and there's a difference. So when we're irritated, we can be excited, right? And so that's why it's important to be clear and truly know, not assume what the behavior is showing us. Yeah.
No, that's awesome advice. You know, I want to thank you for sharing that. I've learned a lot more about dogs than I ever really have.
There's a lot to learn, man.
Yeah. So when does your website launch?
So worldofdogtraining.com is up and running. And so that's to hire me for in-person dog training. As it relates to the online training, we're hoping to have that up in like 2 months.
Okay. And will that be the same website?
It will. Yep.
Okay. So worldofdogtraining.com for both?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And so in short, it'll be very high-end in-person dog training where I interview people before I'll work with them. And the other option would be the online dog training. And then one option for the online dog training as it relates to kind of like the higher end of that piece is you can send in your video of your dog issues. And then I'll hop on a call, like a Zoom call, and I'll coach them on what they need to do through the issue that I see in the video. And so I was talking about reading the body language. Well, the video allows me to see what's going on with the owner, like with their body language. What signal are they sending to the dog? And what signal is the dog sending to the owner by way of the dog's body language? So there's a lot going on, and I just decipher that for people.
No, that's really cool. And you also have another company, don't you? It's CBD for Animals.
Yeah. So, you know, my thing is this, like my military working dog kept me safe in the war zone. Right. And I feel like I owe that dog my life. And the other piece is that after the war, like I mentioned earlier, I was really numbed out and like didn't know how to be in tune with my feelings and stuff. And I was able to connect with dogs before people. And so dogs kind of woke my heart back up. They allowed me to experience love again. And I think that's like a huge gift and it's really, really beautiful. And so I feel like I owe something to dogs for what they've done and given for me. And that's why I've created the online dog training because my thing is this, there's close to 2 million animals euthanized every year. Part of that is people return dogs when they're naughty, right? And they don't know what to do with it. And eventually those animals end up becoming euthanized a lot of the time. Well, that just doesn't sit well with me because it's just an education piece and an effort piece. So if we can get online dog training into the hands of everyone that adopts a dog from a rescue, So they're informed on how to best interact with their dog, bond with their dog on a higher level, and have the best relationship possible for their lifestyle. Then I know less dogs will be returned, and that means less dogs euthanized. The other part is, like I mentioned, I used to work with a lot of people as it relates to one-on-one training. Well, I don't do it that way anymore, but I still want to serve. So I'm able to serve by way of the online dog training from World of Dog Training and my Peace of Mind brand, which Peace of Mind is a CBD, no THC, meaning your dog's not going to get high from this product, so that we can help also reduce euthanasia that way and also reduce the health issues. So CBD helps dogs be calmer. And I can't make medical claims. We could just go based on what we see out in the field, meaning people trying the product. And what do they tell us? And that is that often the product can calm a dog down. It can help with inflammation. It can help with irritation of the skin, like hot spots or itching. And it's even been able to do things as it relates to, like, extend the life of dogs with cancer. It's reduced tumors in some instances. And I'm not saying my product, because my product's still being developed. We're still testing it. I'm speaking generally as it relates to cannabis for pets. But it's really important to know, like, not all the products are the same, right? And so there's some companies out there making claims that aren't legitimate, and the best thing to do is to educate oneself, okay? But there's a lot of snake oil going around. There's a lot of misinformation going around. And I'm not the cannabis guy. I am the dog behavior, dog trainer guy. That's what I know. Because I don't know cannabis and because I don't know animal health that well, I know behavior very well. I'm partnering with veterinarians and cannabis people to educate me so that we can bring the best product possible. And so I want to give back by way of this Peace of Mind company to help pets feel better, because the truth is that I've had multiple near-death experiences as it relates to life-threatening illnesses. And so I know what it's like to go through these horrible life-threatening situations and the physical and mental toll that it can take. So if I can have a product that can improve the quality of life of dogs, then they won't have to go through as much pain as I had when I went through what I did.
No, that's awesome. That's an awesome story. Anything you can do to, you know, help another being is a worthwhile venture.
Exactly. Yeah.
So where can people find you on if they want to reach out to you, like on social media and stuff?
Sure. So for online, it's at I am Ryan Matthews for social media. So it's I am R-Y-A-N Matthews with two T's and an S at the end. And again, it's worldofdogtraining.com and peaceofmindhemp.com. That site should be live in a couple of weeks. And then my personal brand, where I do public speaking and transformational work with people, because I had 5 near-death experiences and a whole lot of crazy realizations after all that. I help people with all that stuff by way of iamryanmatthews.com. They can learn about all that kind of good stuff.
Awesome. Hey, man, this has been really fun. I learned a lot. I want to thank you again for coming on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. And I just hope that we were able to drop some knowledge to your audience and they found it really valuable.
Yeah, most definitely. I'm sure they did. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Veterans Advocate podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm trying to bring as much value as humanly possible in one place through this podcast. I'm talking to a lot of veterans. Some of them are entrepreneurs. Some of them are homeless. And everybody I talk to has some really awesome advice to give you. So I hope you've gotten something out of it. I hope you've gotten value from it. And if you have, be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends. I'm trying to reach as many veterans as I can to help spread the message. And that is that we're in this together. Nobody has to go through this alone. And one way that we can help each other is just by telling our stories. And every time we tell a story, well, then you might reach somebody else who's struggling. And maybe that somebody really needed to hear that. So be sure to help spread that message by sharing the podcast with your friends. And if you want, you can check out the website at www.veteransmentorship.com. If you got a lot out of this podcast, but you want to hear some more, and if you want to have some one-on-one help, I'm happy to offer that. And I can do that through my website at www.veteransmentorship.com.